Well, good evening. I'm happy to be here with you. What a great opportunity to be together. And we're going to be doing a little something different tonight. We're going to be exchanging holy kisses. No, I'm just kidding. We're not going to be doing that. I want to see if you're awake out there. We are going to be doing more of a bit more interaction and a bit more of a teaching instead of a preaching. And so I'm hoping that it'll engage you in a different way, but you will need your Bibles. You will need to open up your Bible to Luke chapter 2, and this is Luke's account of the birth of Christ. And what I'm hoping we can do is declutter Christmas. You know, clutter is when you get all these things around, and sometimes there's so much extra stuff we can miss what Christmas is all about. So we are going to be unwrapping Christmas tonight. And these sheets are for both children and for those who have the children inside that needs a way to color and crossword puzzles. There's all sorts of things on here for you, so please take one of those. So a long time, people have tried to bring the Christmas story to life. Maybe you've seen a living nativity, you know, where the actual people dress up, and sometimes there are even real animals in the nativity. I've never seen one that came through my church, but there was a church in Florida a number of years ago that they had been doing a big production for Christmas. They had music with an orchestra. They had a big choir, and it grew and grew. And over 40 years, it became this thing that everybody in the city wanted to come to watch. And it got to the point where it involved real live animals. And so you can imagine all the animals that would have to be in the nativity, and they were there. Now, this particular church, on this particular Sunday, Pastor Chuck Lewis wanted it to really grab people's attention. And so, at the most dramatic moment, when the choir is singing and the music is soaring, in walked a man riding an adult camel. And it was being led by another person dressed up in authentic imitation biblical clothing that we all use for these church events. And the rider was perched on top of his camel, 7 feet up. And they got about halfway down the center aisle, and the camel decided it wanted to go no further. And it just stopped. Now, if you've ever been around a camel, they're pretty large critters. And this camel decided to make itself known it was going to go no further. And so it let out this camel annoyed noise, kind of like a noise. And the choir is singing, but the camel is groaning. And then the camel, it stumbles. And the man on top of the camel was thrown off the camel and landed on the pew. And the man who was leading the camel tried to get it to go. The camel would have none of it. And so the camel took a step back and it fell over onto the people who were in the pew. An 800-pound creature fell on these people. Now, no one was hurt, including the camel, but it did cause one of the church members to say, "I've never seen anything like that before." I think we could all say that if we had been there. Now, Christmas pageants like this can be really entertaining, and sometimes unintentionally so, but sometimes to get the entertainment, we can miss the heart of the story. And so we're going to look tonight about what was really in the Christmas story. Now, if you look at Christmas cards or Christmas movies or pageants, you're going to have a hard time figuring out what should be there and what shouldn't. So we're going to ask the question, should we find people like Mary, Joseph, baby Jesus, donkeys, lowing cattle, shepherds, sheep, angels, wise men, camels, Christmas stars, and drummer boys in our Christmas pageant? The only way to find out is to go to the original text. So we're not going to go to a cold winter's night. We don't know if it was a cold winter's night, but we are going to ask the question, who was there when Jesus was born? Now, I may ruin some of your Christmas nativity sets. You may have to toss out your Christmas cards because they're inaccurate. Or we could just breathe a sigh and say, well, we're still trying to pass on holiday greetings. It's okay. But when we get down to the core, the true story will be better than the things that have been added to it. And so I'm hoping it'll be encouraging for you. So we're going to look at God's word first. And so I would encourage you to open up your Bible to Luke chapter 2 if you're not there yet. And I'm just going to read the first 20 verses. They're familiar, but they're still fantastic. So if you would be able to and want to join me to stand as we read, I'd encourage you to do that. But we'll start in verse 1 of chapter 2. In those days, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that the whole empire should be registered. This first registration took place while Quirinius was governing Syria. So everyone went to be registered, each to his own town. Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and family line of David, to be registered along with Mary, who was engaged to him and was pregnant. While they were there, the time came for her to give birth. Then she gave birth to her firstborn son, and she wrapped him tightly in cloth and laid him in a manger, because there was no guest rooms available for them. In that same region, the shepherds were staying out in the fields and keeping watch at night over their flock. Then an angel of the Lord stood before them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, "Don't be afraid, for look, I proclaim to you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. Today, in the city of David, a Savior was born for you, who is the Messiah, the Lord. This will be a sign for you. You will find a baby wrapped tightly in a cloth and lying in a manger." Suddenly, there was a multitude of the heavenly host with the angel, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest heaven, and peace on earth to people he favors." When the angels had left them and returned to heaven, the shepherds said to one another, "Let's go straight to Bethlehem and see what has happened, which the Lord has made known to us." They hurried off and found both Mary and Joseph and the baby who was lying in the manger. After seeing them, they reported the message they were told about this child, and all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds said to them. But Mary was treasuring up all these things in her heart and meditating on them. The shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things they had seen and heard, which were just as they had been told. May God bless the reading of his word, and you may be seated. Well, here's the big idea for today. We are going to be looking at this passage, and there are really three episodes in this passage, three crucial episodes that focus on the birth of Christ. And they are going to help us know how we can have certainty that there is such a thing as great joy. Did you hear that? The angel said, good news of great joy, mega joy. And so Luke wrote all this so that we can have certainty. And we're going to have some pictures up here in just a little bit. But we're going to start by looking at the character that comes up first. Look at verse 1. In those days, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus. Caesar Augustus, do you know who this man is? Well, if you lived back then, you would. This is the most important man in the whole world. In fact, most of the world was under this man's command. Caesar is like a name that would be emperor or king. And Augustus was a name given to him, kind of a divine name. He wasn't known as Augustus always, but he had a pretty long time that he reigned as the governor, as the emperor of the land. And the whole world, the whole empire had to be registered. So this is happening in this particular moment in this man's reign. It was happening. Here we go. This is the man, the myth, the legend, Caesar Augustus. He reigned from 25 BC to about AD 14. And so we're right now about between 6 and 4 BC. And he gives us command that everybody has to be registered. A registration was something that he had done before. Here's an inscription of a work when he asked people to be registered. And about every 12 years, he asked everybody in the empire to be registered. And that just means to be counted. So they'd have to go to a place and officially say, "I am in the empire." And then they would say, "Great, then you have to pay money to be in the empire." And so they have to pay taxes. And so this is what they were doing. They would go pay taxes, and that's how the emperor would fund his new palace build or his pool or this expansion of the kingdom. And so this particular inscription here is not the same one that was recorded by Luke, but is one that Caesar Augustus gave. Now, if you were to be in this time, Israel is a small little country, and that's where we're going to focus on. The whole empire, they're going to focus in on this little area. And if you were to go to Wales here in Great Britain, you'd find out that Israel doesn't even fit all of Wales. It's a small little land. But it becomes one of the most important lands in the Bible, but it's also very important in the world history. You see, where it sits, and you can look in the back of your Bible, I'm sure you have a map there. Where it sits is it connects Africa to Asia, and then it goes around to Europe. And this little stretch of land known as Palestine or Israel was so important because that's where all the trade routes went. And if you controlled Israel, you controlled all the trade in the country, in the world, really. Because if you go a little bit east of Israel into the desert, no one is going to be able to travel there. It's too hot and too hostile. But there in Israel, they have several routes that went north to south, and they could get all sorts of trade. Plus, it has a beautiful coastline, the Mediterranean Sea, and they could get boats in and out of there. So it was perfect for what they needed. So here we come to Judea. And this is where we're focusing in on. So Judea was an area that was really hard to govern. It was a place where Jews lived, and they were known for not liking other people to rule over them. And so there were history of revolts. And so what Caesar Augustus did is he left other people under his control to help rule the land. And so look who's in the story next. We have Caesar Augustus, and he's rarely in a nativity pageant, right? But he's there in the background. And then you have verse 2. It took place while Quirinius was governing Syria. Now, just show me your hands. Have you ever seen a Christmas pageant with Quirinius? Anyone? Does anyone know how to, can anyone pronounce Quirinius? It took me a long time to say Quirinius, but he was very important. It says he was governing Syria. Now, this registration is a pretty interesting dilemma for those who are studying the Bible, because Quirinius was not a governor officially during this time when Jesus was born. He was a governor before, and he was a governor after. And so we wonder what was going on. Well, the first registration was one that he initiated, but it didn't get finished until he had left his governing role. And so this first census took place a few years before Christ, so about 8 BC. And by the time it got going, it took a while for the whole thing to plan out. And here's the big issue. There was a man, a very humble man, known as Herod the Great. He actually called himself that, and he was great because he built great things. You can still see amazing amphitheaters and things that he built. But he was a very paranoid man, especially at the end of his life. He was sure people were trying to kill him. He killed his wives. He killed his children because he thought they were going to take his throne. And so because he was so unstable, it took even longer for this registration to happen in Israel. And so finally, it comes out, and this is what we're going to see that affects two key people. Well, the registration, look at verse 3 here, it meant that everyone had to go to his own town. Now, your own town wasn't the place where you lived. Back then, your own town was the place where your grandparents were from, your ancestors lived. So for me, I'd have to go to Denmark or maybe to Holland to find out where we're from and register there. People had to travel. And if you're going to travel, usually you would travel in groups because it's safer that way, but it required people to have to make plans. You didn't just pick up and go to the local post office and declare yourself and registering with the kingdom. So this took a while for the whole thing to play out. And look what's happening here in verse 4. We find out that Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth. I want to back up a little bit because I want to show you a couple other pictures that I missed here as we were going along. First of all, Quirinius wasn't living in Israel. He was north of Israel in this beautiful city here in Syria. This is in Antioch, and he reigned there, but he had a lot of power over the land. This is north of Israel by quite a bit. It would take several days to get up there, but he still was making sure that everyone in Judea and Israel was going to be registered. And so back to our friend Joseph. This is where Joseph is from. It's a city called Nazareth. It's in the northern part of Israel. It was a small village. It had maybe 500 people in it. Not a lot of people. In fact, it didn't have any major roads that went through it at all. It had a trail that went here and people could get in and out, but it was just kind of off on the side of the map, and no one went to Nazareth for anything. In fact, you remember, it was once said, could anything good come out of Nazareth? Because it was so despised by people. So small town. It's interesting that what we understand, this town was founded by descendants of David, the family of David, the great king. When they came back after exile, they all gathered together and they went north and they settled here in Nazareth. It's a city that filled of people from David's line. In fact, the word Nazareth in there is Nazar or Netzer in the Hebrew. That means branch. In Isaiah 11 verse 1, it says, there shall come forth a shoot from the stump of Jesse and a branch from the tribe of David. And so Nazareth meant branch town. It was people who were from the branch of David. And so you have all these people and they have to go back to their hometown. So where is David from? Does anybody remember where David is from? Yes. Bethlehem. Exactly. That is so good. So where is Bethlehem? Is it just a couple villages over? Exactly. Far, far away. In fact, if you had a satellite, you looked down from space, it would look like this. With the lines in it too, just to make sure it's hard to see. But there were a couple ways you would go from Nazareth down to Bethlehem. And this was about a 80-mile journey. Now, does anybody know of any cities that are about 80 miles away from us here in Lincoln? Manchester? Close. It's a little bit further. It's about that far. So think about, you have to take a journey to go to Manchester, but you don't have a car. You're going to have to walk to Manchester. Now, I know some Manchester United fans would easily walk for a free ticket to the game. So they would go without any trouble, but your pregnant wife is with you. And so you're going to walk with her all the way to Manchester to take in a football match. Maybe not. But if you were going to go down from Nazareth to Bethlehem, in fact, you wouldn't go down, you'd go up. Bethlehem was higher in elevation than Nazareth, and you would take one of two routes. The one in the middle, you wouldn't normally take because it went through a bad part of the country where all those Samaritans lived. Or you go down into the valley, it's the lowest place on earth, where the Jordan River is, that kind of a black thing down at the bottom there, that is the Dead Sea, the lowest place on earth. It was the Jordan Rift Valley. And what does it look like? It looks like this. So they would have to go down. One possible route is through this valley here, the Herod Valley. And you go past Jezreel, and then you see the beginning of that hill. It's Gideon's Spring. Remember where Gideon and his men, they gathered, and all the men went down to drink the water. That's how we narrowed down his army. And then they would go around Mount Gilboa, where sadly the king of Israel, Saul, was killed there. They would go down and into the Jordan Rift Valley. And they would have seen things like this in the Jordan Rift Valley, this deep valley, a lush area of agriculture. And they would go down and down and down. It would take them about 4 days to get down there. They would arrive at Jericho and then they'd have to go up. And this is a famous route that you might remember, the story of the Good Samaritan. A man was going on this journey and he was assailed by thieves and beaten up and tossed in the side of the road. This was a famous route that was known for having bandits, and most people think it's this route that Jesus was referring to. But they would go from Jericho all the way up. In fact, you can still visit the Good Samaritan Inn up there along the way, and a way up to Jerusalem, where they would end up. And that wasn't the end of their journey, though. This is a bit of what it would look like on the way up, a narrow path and a very steep canyon. And then they, if they could make it all the way up without any trouble, they would have arrived at Jerusalem. And this is what they would have seen as they came in, the western side of Jerusalem. But that wasn't their final destination. They still had about 5 or 6 miles to go, and they would have come down to Bethlehem. So there's Jerusalem at the top. Down at the bottom is the Church of the Nativity. And back in this day, the whole city of Bethlehem would have fit right under that spot. It was a small little town as well. They didn't have hotels. They didn't have any attractions, no cathedrals. There weren't nothing famous there except for once David was born there. That's about all they had, but people didn't really go there for tourism. All that they really had were a bunch of shepherds out in the field that would go there. And they would raise their sheep primarily for the sacrifices in Jerusalem. So here is an old picture from 1839, painted. And you can see there wasn't a lot of things there at the time, and that's how it was kind of back in the day. Not a lot of stuff going on. And the Church of Nativity is kind of off in the hills there. So Rome wants money, and Joseph has to go down to register himself. And so why did Mary go? Why would Mary go with Joseph? It says that they were engaged, but they weren't married yet. She could have stayed with their parents, right? Why do you think Mary would go on that big journey being pregnant with Joseph? Let's see if we can have a couple thoughts here. Well, maybe you have a thought. Well, why would Mary go with Joseph? What do you think, Theo? Caught you in the spot there. I don't know, right? Okay, any other thoughts? It's a good one. Yeah. Oh, she was pregnant and she wasn't married? Okay, so that was really bad back then. If you were pregnant and the father wasn't the one that you were married to, people would find all sorts of ways to talk about you. In a small village of 500 people, everyone was talking. And for Joseph to leave Mary, that would have left her to the people who were there. So it's a way to protect and care for Mary, right? Any other reasons why Mary might go on the journey? Yeah. Was there a prophecy about that? Yes. About being born in Bethlehem? There was, wasn't there? 700 years before this day, in Micah chapter 5, verse 2, God had said Bethlehem would be the place in which the Messiah would be born. Now, Mary and Joseph, being godly people, would have known about these prophecies. And when they saw that the king of the world said, go and be registered, I think they were probably going through their minds and saying, that's how God is going to get us to Bethlehem. That's where the Messiah is going to be born. It's a possibility. There's one other thing we've learned in history. To get money, the emperor learned you don't just get the men, you get the women too. So it was actually common practice for girls who are 12 years and older to have to be registered as well. Now, if you chose not to go to be registered, a couple things could happen. One, you would have to pay a greater tax. But also, you would go to your homeland because typically you had land there that your family still owned. If you didn't pay the tax on your land, the government would confiscate it from you. And so to keep the land in the family, they would go down to pay the tax for themselves, pay the tax on the land, and Mary would have to go with them. Rome wanted money, but Joseph took Mary with her. And so they get down there to a small town, and they took this 4 days journey. Here's another picture of the Church of the Nativity there, a small little thing. Bethlehem's much bigger now, but here's a question. How did they get there? Look back in the text here and tell me, by what means did they get there? Was there a taxi, a cart, a donkey? What was there? They walked. Does it say that they walked? Let's look. Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and family line of David, to be registered along with Mary, who was engaged to him and was pregnant. So all it says here is they went up from the town of Nazareth. No mention of a donkey? What do you think? Now, you thought of a camel. That's really good because in this time, people would ride camels. But does it say a camel here? There's no camel here. Was there a cart? There's no cart. Did they walk? The fact is, we don't know. Now, I want to tell you a true story about why we shouldn't try to add things to the Christmas story. There was a situation of a live nativity in Spain a few years ago, and they actually had a real donkey to represent the imagined donkey that was in the story. Unfortunately, there was a rather large man who weighed about 322 pounds who thought it'd be fun to ride the donkey. He climbed over the fence, got on the donkey to have pictures taken of him and the donkey, and unfortunately his weight broke the donkey, and the donkey was actually in the donkey hospital for a number of days. The sad part of the story is the donkey didn't make it. This is why we shouldn't add things to the Christmas story. These things could happen, but more so that we add these things because we're trying to figure it out and imagine how they got there. But the fact is, isn't it interesting, all the pictures you've seen of Mary riding the donkey and the text doesn't say. And here's why. It wasn't important. What was important is they went to this place. They make a big deal out of it, right? It was from Nazareth in Galilee to Judea to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem. That is, means house of bread. The city of David is particularly important. And he was of the house and the family line of David. It comes up again, David twice. This is really important to be registered with Mary. So they're down there. They go down there. And here's a couple things that also get confusing in the story. We imagine, well, let me ask you this. How do the stories portray Mary and Joseph arriving in Bethlehem? What is normally going on in all the stories that you've seen? Calm, relaxed, right? No, what normally is going on? Mary is in pain, right? She's about to burst with child. And Joseph doesn't know what to do, and he's confused, and he goes to all the inns that are in Bethlehem. He goes to the Holiday Inn. He goes to this hotel, and they're all full because Bethlehem is full of visitors to come and be registered. Well, does it say that, though? It says that he went to be registered, and then look at verse 6. While they were there, the time came for her to give birth. No hints of desperation, is there? In fact, she didn't go into labor until they were already there. We add this drama to the story because it makes it really interesting. It's fun to see the man panicking, what do I do? And my wife's going to give birth. And all these innkeepers come out and they say, no, we don't have room. And then finally the innkeeper looks at the man in desperation. He points to his wife who's holding her stomach and her belly and saying, oh, the innkeeper goes, oh, well, I have a dirty saber for you. You can go in the back. That didn't happen. In fact, here's another question. Is there an innkeeper at all? Is he in the story? Well, it doesn't seem to indicate an innkeeper here, does it? But they were there, and the time came for her to give birth. Now, if you were to go to Bethlehem today, this Church of the Nativity, you can go inside, and this is a traditional place where they mark as the birth of Christ. And this is where the manger is today. They say it happens in this spot behind that pillar. And then here's another older photograph taken in the 1930s. This cave-like place. So it might have been a spot like this. Here's a picture of a woman who wrapped her baby tightly in cloth. This is a Bedouin mother in the early 1900s. And that's still what they would have done hundreds and hundreds of years ago. So here's the family. They're in Bethlehem. But while they were there, the time came for her to give birth. No drama. It's just straightforward. It's a minimal language. But think about how different this is in the last birth story you heard. When people talked about a child being born, they give all sorts of rich details, right? Like, we went into the room and these doctors and nurses were there and we got the epidural and we were at this particular hospital. It's located there, but we have no idea where it happened. It doesn't give us any indication in this text. So think about this. The most important person to be born, and we don't even know where it happened, except it was in Bethlehem somewhere. Because it's really not about where it happened. The point is that the Christ was born. He was there. And listen to this care that happens. The time came for her to give birth. And then verse 7, then she gave birth to her firstborn son. And she wrapped him tightly in cloth and laid him in a manger because there was no guest room available to them. And like this little bundle here, that baby Jesus was wrapped up tightly. Now, why would you wrap up a baby tightly? What do you think? To keep the baby warm. So good. Yeah, if there was a newborn baby here, any mother would have that child bundled up with blankets, right? Excellent. Why else might you wrap up a baby tightly? Yeah. To keep it safe. Okay, so honestly, what child does not like to be cuddled by mom or dad? Or even adults, we like to snuggle up to people that we love. It would make that child feel safe, right? Even baby Jesus. Why else might we wrap up a baby? Now, mums, you might be able to answer this question. What do newborn babies typically do? Are they calm and still? They cry? And do they just sit there with their arms folded like this? Or little babies, when they're new, typically can't control their limbs. And so they'll have sudden movements. And it's so often that if the baby isn't swaddled, if it's not wrapped tightly, it'll start to fall asleep and its arm will move and the baby will wake up and start crying. And so it's a way to keep the baby still and help it feel safe and warm. Those are all such good reasons. And so here is Mary caring for a child who is truly God and truly human. Now, it says an interesting note here that there was no room, there's no guest room available for them. So here's a question. Some of you probably have a different translation of the Bible. Does anybody else have a different word in there? There's no room? Or what does we normally hear about? In the inn. Okay. Is there... Well, first of all, I want to show you the manger here. This is an actual manger that they found right around the Bethlehem area. And this is a small child in that manger. So you can see a baby would fit in there. Here's an empty one. But it's not made of stone, of wood, is it? Usually we think of a wooden manger. They didn't have a lot of wood back then. A lot of stone there. They would carve it out, chisel it out. Stone was really available. And plus, wooden mangers don't last very long. They tend to break down and wouldn't last over time. But these stone mangers will last forever. So here is what we've got going on here. This room, this inn, or here it's translated guest room. Why would we translate it as guest room in one version but inn in another? Does that sound like the same location? Same kind of a thing. Well, an inn has a guest room, so maybe you could think about it that way. Okay, so let me highlight a couple things here. This word is kataluma in the Greek. So here's your Greek lesson for tonight. Kataluma. What does kataluma mean? It means guest room. Okay, we're really getting to the heart of this matter, right? Guest room or upper room. In fact, if you look in the Gospel of Luke later, when Jesus gathered with his disciples, they went to an upper room, a kataluma. It was above the main floor of the home. But it was, in this picture, you can see right there, you have the ground level, there's a donkey, perfectly pictured for our story. And then above it is the guest room. And typically, if you had an upper room, it would be for guests on top of your house. Now, there's a word that's used for an inn, like a commercial place where you pay to board. And it's this word here, pendokion. And that is an actual inn. It is a paid accommodation. And Luke uses this word in the story of the Good Samaritan. The Good Samaritan takes the poor beat-up man to an inn, an actual place, and he pays for him there. So what we're learning from this is that Luke is using a word that isn't the same word he would use for an inn like a hotel that we would stay in. Now, in this time, when you're traveling to places, a place like Bethlehem isn't going to have really hotels or inns. It's going to have a small town, people who live there. Now, Joseph, being a family member of people who were down in Bethlehem, would have gone and stayed with family members. Or he would have said, I'm from the family of David, and people would have taken them in. Most likely what happened is he's staying in an actual residence, just somebody's home. But it says there was no guest room available for them. Now, this can communicate it was occupied. Perhaps there were other people already there. And Mary, being pregnant, very pregnant, doesn't want to go up and down the ladder. So put her downstairs in the house. But what it communicates is actually a bit more to the story. And I think you'll find this interesting. By saying there was no room available to them, it meant that no one would make it available to them. There's still the stigma. They would have known that Mary and Joseph are betrothed. It would have been obvious to the people who are looking on. And so they would have been hesitant to allow this couple who's not married to share the guest room. What this is pointing out is the humiliation into which Christ was born. He was being despised because of his parents. And so they wouldn't let them up into the upper room, a place that would have been more comfortable. Now, I want to show you some inside of the house pictures so you can see what this would look like. Instead of being upstairs, they would have been downstairs. And you can see there's an oxen there. And back in the day, you would have brought your animals into the house in this cut-out lower area because their body heat would have made the house warmer. They didn't have heaters like we do here in our homes. They didn't have fires inside. So the animals would have kept it warmer. And you can see the cattle there are eating out of the trough. And then there's that circular area that would have been a clean trough as well, a manger to put the baby into. But they if it happened like this, Mary and Joseph would have been in that upper level there, above the oxen, and they would have had the baby up there. Here's another picture of an actual home. They're looking down, so that rug right there is the upper room, and then you can see kind of down below there's some arches in the picture. And we're going to switch the camera angle in a bit. So you see that circle with that cloth up there? We're going to now watch as we go, and there's that cloth still up there. So down below you can see the arches. That's the ground level where they would have stayed. There's no room in the upper room, in that kataluma, so they're down below. So this is where they would have been. This is where it would have happened. Now they would have stayed there and had the baby, and they would have been settled. And this is all showing that Joseph and Mary are caring for the Son of God. But it also shows that God doesn't make a big deal about his son. He came in quietly. Right near to Bethlehem was this amazing mountain that Herod had built. Herod the Great. It's called the Herodium. It's quite tall. And he had people, slaves, build this tall mountain on the top of this Herodium. He had this fantastic palace. It had several swimming pools at the bottom, several Olympic-sized swimming pools for the summer fun. And this was a luxurious palace. And then not too far away in Jerusalem, you had the temple, this luxurious temple, gold and everything. And Jesus was not born there. He was born in a place of humility. When we look at the story for what it actually is and take away all these extra things, we can appreciate even more what God did in sending his son in this kind of an environment. He was putting Jesus at a very lowly level, but also he was taking care of his son, providing godly parents who took care of their son. They wrapped him in that cloth and kept him warm and kept him safe. He was in a home in which there would be protection from the elements. He's fulfilling all the prophecy. When we unwrap Christmas, what we find inside is far better than we might have imagined. Now, I told you there were three scenes, but I didn't tell you I wasn't going to get to them all tonight. So we'll look at them some other time. We've got to save something for next year, right? But as you look at the stories, we've kind of started unpacking this. Ask yourself a couple questions. Were the wise men there that night? Was there a Christmas star shining above the stable? In fact, I'll give you a little spoiler alert. It probably didn't happen for 9 months to a year after that. Matthew's account is at a different period of time. But the shepherds were there. And you can look into the story and ask yourselves, what actually happened? What was it like? And go into the story and talk about it, act it out, but don't bring any donkeys into your story, please. So we're going to finish up our time tonight by singing a song together. And it's just a way to, as we finish our time, to be thinking about this little town in Bethlehem. We're going to sing lots of Christmas carols this year. Don't let the sentimentality fool you. The truth is always better. But don't be put off if someone does have a donkey in their nativity.